This message really grew out of 10 years of college teaching when I was on the faculty at Baylor University. I had a number of students to come to me and say, "Prof, I'm in your required Old Testament or New Testament course. And I grew up in a Baptist home, was taught to believe in God and to believe that God was good. But I see so much bad in the world. And also in the light of my science courses and psychology and philosophy courses, I wonder if in fact if this universe is really infinite in size, if this world and its resultant life forms could not have been the product of accident rather than by design and creation, as you people who believe in God say." Now, I did not have a large number of students to say this across the years, but I had enough to say that to me that I began to think, if this is a problem, if this is creating doubt and making them wonder, and some Christian young people began to question, I decided it was time for me to go back and review some courses that I'd not had in a number of years. Early in my life, before I became a professor, I had seriously considered becoming a medical missionary. A medical missionary because my science courses had been among the most interesting and I had enjoyed them among the most. In fact, in high school, I had won a full academic scholarship to LSU based upon a competitive examination given throughout the entire state of Louisiana to the top six seniors in every high school of the state. I had placed second in the state, had been given that scholarship, but had turned down that to LSU because I felt by then that God wanted me to give my life in some type of ministry, and I felt I should go to a denominational school to prepare for the ministry. My freshman year in Baylor, I took three science courses meeting the basic requirements for the Bachelor of Arts degree, and two of my three professors offered me scholarships in the science courses, which I took under them because of the quality of work, so they said, that was made in their courses. I indicated to them that I was honored by this, but I felt called into the Christian ministry and did not see that I could accept scholarships, and which entailed a number of additional courses in science, because I wanted to major in Bible or major in religion. I wanted to give my life in the service of Jesus Christ. One of my professors, Professor Bernal in geology, indicated that I had tied with one other student as having made the highest grade in the history of Baylor University on a departmental finalized exam in the Department of Geology, and asked me if I would, that he would grant the scholarship, and that all my expenses would be paid if I would come into the area. This was a real test of my own faith and commitment to Jesus Christ. Here was a way. But I felt that God was calling me and that I must give my life in another way. I'm providing this as a background to say that then years later, as I come as a Bible professor, and then here students coming, I decided it was time for me to go back and review some courses, for I had not found my science courses to be destructive of my faith. For my own personal experience, I had found my professors devout, committed Christian men from whom I had gained a great deal of faith. But because of the increasing number of students coming to me, I decided that I wanted to be able to talk intelligently with them about this whole matter of Christian faith, belief in God, belief in the Bible, and one's total life commitment. So let me entitle my message tonight, Science and Religion. Science and Religion. Let me begin at a point, if I may, on which scientists and religionists will agree, those of us who believe in the Bible and those who would not believe in the Bible, a point at which we can agree. All of us would agree that we live on a planet called Earth, and that this Earth is simply one of several planets in our solar system, which solar system is simply one small part of a galaxy, and that this galaxy is only one small part of a universe so fantastically huge it staggers the human mind to try to comprehend it. We really do not know, scientists do not know, how vast the universe is. The last report I read, they had actually recorded light coming in from outer space at distances up to 2 billion light years away. Now, a light year, as you know, is the distance that light travels in a year. It travels at the rate of 186,000 miles a second. In miles per hour, that's 669,600,000 miles an hour, about two-thirds of a billion miles an hour. Multiply that times 24 hours in a day, and that by 365 days in the year, and you get a light year. And they've recorded light coming in from 2 billion light years away. They are now estimating, and some scientists are now guessing, that there may actually be as many suns in space as there are grains of sand on all the deserts and seashores and riverbanks and creek banks upon this planet called Earth. So a student said to me, "Prof, in the light of that size universe, isn't it just likely that there's an infinite number of chances that this world and its life forms could be the product of chance instead of, as you say, by choice, by cosmic coincidence, sheer accident, rather than by design or by purpose?" And if it could have in a universe that size, what happens to belief in God? Can I any longer really believe in my hometown Sunday school idea of God creating the universe? Well, we all agree that we live on a planet called Earth. But once you and I agree on that, we're faced with a very interesting choice, a very interesting idea. It's called an exclusive alternative. Either this Earth has always been here or has had a beginning. An exclusive alternative simply means you're hemmed in with some choices in life to just one of two choices. Now, either the world's always been around or it's had a beginning. I think we would agree that this is an exclusive alternative. Now, not all choices are like this, but some are. You've got to choose to live. You've got to choose to die. Can you really offer me a third alternative? That's called an exclusive alternative. Now, I said not all choices are like this, but I believe it is with the planet, Earth. Either it's been here always or it's had a beginning. Both science and religion are agreed it's had a beginning. Scientists say somewhere between 3.5 billion and 10 billion years ago, our Earth had a beginning. Therefore, life forms also had to have a beginning, since they at one time did not exist. The Bible does not say how long ago, but simply puts it very beautifully and majestically in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Science and religion are agreed that this earth, as an earth, is not eternal. It has had a beginning. Life, as such, has had a beginning. But once admitting that, we're faced with a second very, very important exclusive alternative. Was that beginning of the planet and its resultant life forms the product or the effect of sheer chance, or was there choice? Was there intelligence or non-intelligence? I can classify an answer you give me on one of the two categories. Was it a cosmic coincidence that this boy told me, or as he believed it was? Or was there divine design and purpose in the producing of it? I believe this is a valid, exclusive alternative. Chance or choice? Accident or purpose? Coincident or design? Which is it really? I had to confess to this young physics major. Theoretically, I would have to grant that remote possibility of this planet Earth and its resultant life forms beginning by chance. But I wondered if he really understood the type of faith he would really have to believe that, as over against, say, belief that there was design and purpose and intelligence involved in the system. And so it's to this that I wish to speak with you tonight and share with you, if I may. Let me talk about the matter of things happening by chance for a moment before I come more direct into the body of my material. If I could take 10 coins and line them up on my hand tonight, take an ink pencil and number those coins 1 through 10, put them into my pocket, what do you think the chances would be that I could shake them up and by sheer accident, now no cheating, for if I cheated on you, that's not accident. There's a design and purpose, you see. I've rigged the deal. But now that implies intelligence. It's no longer chance. It has now become choice and design. So for just a moment, have faith in it. What do you think the chances would be that I could just shake them up and by sheer accident pull the number 1 coin out first? That ought to be easy to figure. 10 coins there, the chances 1 out of 10, the odds are 9 to 1 against it. 9 of the coins I'd more likely pull out than I would that 1. Now, if I were to pull out that number 1 coin, chances being 1 out of 10, very likely I could convince you that I'd done it by mere accident, by sheer chance. If I inserted that coin back into my pocket, shook them up again, now do you know what the chances would be that I could pull the number 2 coin out second? Still 10 coins, but no longer 1 out of 10. Having pulled the number 1 coin out first, the chances now become 1 out of 100 that I could pull the number 2 coin out. Inserting it, the chances of my pulling the number 3 coin out third has jumped to 1 out of 1,000. The chances of pulling the number 4 coin out fourth, 1 out of 10,000. The number 5 coin fifth, 1 out of 100,000. The number 6 coin sixth, 1 out of a million. The 7th, 8th, and 9th, on up the line to the 10th coin. The chances of my pulling 10 coins out by sheer accident is 1 out of 10 billion chances that I could do it. Now, be honest with me. How long would you continue to believe me if I said I was still doing it just by chance? Would you really? Would you believe me beyond about the third coin, 1 out of 1,000? Of course, my heart, hope to die, used to be a Boy Scout. Would you believe me? I wouldn't believe you beyond about the third coin. Would you really? Would you believe me? For wouldn't you know that even a seminary professor just might have enough intelligence that I could devise me a system on you? I could file one big notch in the number 1 coin, 2 notches opposite sides on the number 2 coin, 3 notches like a triangle on the 3 coin, 4 notches on the 4 sides holding the 5th coin, you see? Oh, couldn't I? Just a little bit of intelligence, I could pull those things out. Which would you really believe? 1 out of 10 billion chances that I could do it. Now, if you believe that I could do that, while I don't believe in gambling, I'd like to see you after this meeting here tonight. I have a little wager I'd like to... No, I'm teasing. Would you? Or maybe 1 out of 10 billion is so fantastic, I wonder if you and I really comprehend. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around the number 10 billion. Let me try to tell you how many 1 billion amounts to, because when I hear the number 10 billion, I'm so rather staggered by it, I have to think in terms of the national debt or federal taxes or something like that. I find it very hard. 10 billion. If you were to start tomorrow spending $100,000 a day with no days off, do you know how long it takes you just to spend $1 billion? Maybe I can illustrate how many 1 billion amounts you like this. How'd you like to try that for a while? Young ladies, how'd you like to try that for a while? First of the month when the bills come in, I think my wife's tried it. You know how long it takes you to spend $1 billion at the clip of $100,000 a day with no days off? 27 and a half years. That's right. Don't take your pencil now. You can do it after the program's over. Don't check it for yourself. 27 and a half years of $100,000 a day, spend $1 billion, and the chances of my pulling 10 coins out of my pocket is not 1 out of 1 billion. 1 out of 10 billion chances. The chances of my pulling 10 coins out by sheer accident, by real chance, not by choice now, is what $1 would be to about 275 years of $100,000 a day. Any of you really believe that I just done that by accident if I whipped those things out in order? Now, confessing and admitting that illustrations and analogies do not prove, only illustrate, let me use that as an illustration simply to share with you tonight the testimony of one who simply found it far more difficult to believe in chance than I believed in choice. I remember, for instance, in that geology course that our professor taught us that the earth is not sitting exactly straight up and down in relation to the sun. It's tilted. Tilted, I believe he said, at a 23.3-degree angle off of perfect perpendicular. He said to us, this angle he calculated was just about the exact angle for life forms as we know them to have come into existence. Well, this universe is awful big. There are bound to be a lot of planets like Earth maybe out there somewhere with all these suns and everything. That didn't prove a great deal. That's right. I'd believe you when you pull one coin out of ten, one chance out of ten. That's not bad. I'd buy that. Especially if you were a Boy Scout or Girl Scout, I'd probably buy that. But wait. Tilted just about right, he said, also, our Earth is spinning or rotating on its axis at just about the right speed also, about 1,000 miles an hour. He said to our class, what do you think would happen or what would be the result if instead of 1,000 miles an hour, the Earth were rotating only 100 miles an hour? Why, it's easy to figure. The days and nights would be 10 times as long. Precisely correct. And do you know what would happen to life forms as you and I know them if your days in July and August were 10 times as long? When the heat from the sun would build up and build up and build up, it would wither, wilt, and kill most life forms as we know them. And the life forms that managed to survive, he told us, would most surely be killed in the night 10 times as long when the earth would radiate and radiate and radiate its heat. He calculated the possibility that temperatures during those 10 times as long nights might fall in the neighborhood of 240 degrees below zero. And life forms as we know would surely perish. Two things just about right in our tilt about right, spinning about right. Well, I'd bleed two coins out of your pocket, one chance out of 100. That's not bad. That's not bad. I'm from Baylor, man. We take all kinds of chances. You don't believe all sorts of things. Man, odds, you know. Well, that's not bad. But wait, he went on. While we're tilted just about right, spinning just about right, our earth wobbles up a little off that 23 degrees, about 3 degrees above it, and then nicely stopped. And then it starts back down. And as it's tilting up, it looks like the sun's moving toward the south. No, no. It's just our earth tilting up a little. But he said he calculated that the 3 degrees raising up of our earth was just about right for our very existence. For he calculated that if our earth now tilted just about right, spinning just about the right speed, tilted up more than 3 degrees, he calculated the earth would be too directly, probably straight up, and the sun would strike our earth too directly instead of a glancing blow, and the heat, instead of hitting and glancing, would be absorbed by so direct of an encounter. He calculated the enormous energy of the heat of the sun might increase and accelerate the evaporation of our oceans at such a fantastic rate. He calculated the possibility of moisture rising in such masses it'd be pulled to the north and south pole, build up miles deep in ice, lowering the level of the oceans, exposing more land, absorbing more heat, accelerating the evaporation, until he calculated the direct probability that in due time life forms as we know them would perish, and possibly that planet Earth would be kept on the north and south with ice caps and in between blowing deserts of sand are actually open pools of molten lava so intense would the heat possibly be from the sun striking us too directly. Three things working just right, tilted just right, spinning just right, wobbling up just right, but then it stops up there about 3 degrees, moves down back across that 23-degree tilt, comes about 3 degrees below it, and nicely stops again. He said he calculated that we could not go more than 3 degrees below it because, again, something else, a fourth thing would happen. He said if we went too far down, he calculated that possibly the sun would strike our Earth too directly on the North Pole or in that area, possibly melting those huge ice caps, with the melting of that ice possibly flowing into the oceans enough water, it might raise the level of the oceans just enough that that much water, unless more atmosphere came into existence, might absorb all the carbon dioxide and oxygen out of the air, and without them, plant nor animals could live. So here are four things working just about right. We're tilted about right, we're spinning about right, wobbling up about right, wobbling down just about right. These things just work together. 3 degrees up or 3 degrees down. You remember how few degrees three are? Here are 90. Here are 45. Three. So we're tilted just right, spinning just right, wobbling up just right, wobbling down just right. Accident? Maybe so now, but wait just a minute. Chances of my pulling four coins out of my pocket is 1 out of 10,000. I've begun to get suspicious of you along about that coin by the time you pull it out. But let's go on. So here we are then, tilted right, spinning right, warming up right, warming down right. We've already implied the fifth thing, and that is the oceans are just about right. When the Earth originally formed and cooled, he calculated if more atmosphere had not come into existence, the oceans would have, in fact, if just a little bit deeper, absorbed all the carbon dioxide and oxygen to start with, and life forms, he calculated, possibly could never have begun. So the Earth's oceans are just about right. And a sixth thing, the Earth's crust just about right, all about 8,000 miles through, just 10 feet more on the outer crust, 10 feet more now on an Earth, about 25,000 miles around, just 10 feet more around. He calculated unless more atmosphere had come into existence, that much more material matter would have oxidized all the oxygen out to start with, and life forms could not have begun. Here are six things, tilted just right, spinning just right, wobbling up just right, wobbling down just right, or holding just right, or crushed just right, and the chances of my pulling six coins out of my pocket by chance is 1 out of 1,000,000. Well, there's a seventh thing, though. While all this is going on now, tilted and spinning and wobbling up and down, and those oceans, because we're racing around the sun at just about the right speed also, by the way. We're racing around the sun, not in a perfect circle, but more like a round-ended football called an ellipsis, or an elliptical course. We're racing through space while we're wobbling and doing all this other stuff. We're racing in through space about 18 miles a second. That's 1,080 miles a minute, or that's 64,800 miles an hour. Almost 65,000 miles an hour. Our scientists can orbit astronauts about 17,000 miles an hour, and the guys coming back from the moon only hit 25,000 miles an hour. But while we're spinning and racing and wobbling all this stuff, we're racing around the sun at almost 65,000 miles an hour, which he said was just about the right speed for us to live. For he said we could not survive one-third that speed. Instead of 18 miles a second, if it were only 6 miles a second, he calculated we'd go by the sun too slowly on the narrow sides of our elliptical course, or it might even result in our being pulled back into the sun. You know how they bring the astronauts out of orbit? They fire the retro rockets, breaking the speed, and the slower speed causes them to be pulled back. We might conceivably be actually pulled back into the sun where we're going on a one-third our present speed. We could not survive a one-third of present speed, neither could we survive a little bit more than twice our present speed. Instead of 18 miles a second, if we were going 40 miles a second, he calculated that increased speed would shoot us so far into space on the round end of our elliptical course out here that we would freeze to death in the infinite coldness of space out here before we got back close enough to our sun to be warmed back up, stayed alive. Seven things just working together so well. Titted just right, spinning just right, warm up just right, warm down just right, Earth's ocean just right, Earth's crust just right, speed around the sun just right. All just working together so marvelously well. And while all that's going on, we're maintaining just about the right distance from the sun, about 93 million miles. Far enough away that we don't get too close, because that 11 to 12,000 degrees Fahrenheit would burn us up if we got too close. That's about the average temperature of the sun, 11 to 12,000 degrees. Asbestos melts around 4,000 or 5,000 degrees. But the sun has some eruptions that kick up around 1.5 million degrees Fahrenheit. The internal temperatures are estimated between 40 and 50 million degrees Fahrenheit. We think a 100-degree day is hot. But from about 93 million miles away, here we are doing all this stuff now, racing around it. But if we got 50 degrees more out of that 11 to 12,000 degree surface temperature, just 50 degrees more on the average in our climate, 50 degrees less for the period of a year, you and I would die. You and I could not stand a 50-degree average more, 50-degree average less in our atmosphere for the period of a year. 50 degrees, young ladies and young gentlemen, is less than 0.5% of the average surface temperature of the sun. So here it is, working just right, tilted just right, spinning just right, warming up just right, warming down just right, Earth's ocean just right, Earth's crust just right, speed around the sun just right, climate temperature just right, and while all that's going just right, we've got our own satellite, the moon, moving around us at just about the right distance also. Just about the right distance. About 240,000 miles away, the moon moves around us, and from that distance, it pulls with such gravitational pull on the Earth, it literally lifts the oceans and breaks them against the continents, and we call them tides. But listen, in some parts of the world, the difference between low tide and high tide is 60 to 70 feet. The Earth's crust literally bends and stretches outward several inches or near the equator, so gigantic is the gravitational pull from a quarter of a million miles away. That's just about the right distance, though, for the moon to be now moving around us where we're rotating and all this other stuff's going on. Just about the right distance. For if it were to come in too close, we could not survive. I guess every courting couple has been out some spring night or fall night with a big, pretty full moon, you know, and a little light breeze rustling in the leaves and that special person sitting very close, you know, and the heart beating a little faster and pulse a little quicker and breath a little shorter. You can tell I've read about it in the books myself. And I guess every courting couple wished the moon had come in to be a lot bigger, you see, to romantically influence, but science kind of knocks romance sometimes in the head. If instead of 240,000, the moon were to come on to 50,000 miles, the tides would be so colossal and gigantic, every lowland region of the Earth would be flooded. The Atlantic Ocean would push the Gulf of Mexico across Texas and Oklahoma, break against the Rocky Mountains, and return twice daily. You young lovers, I hate to, you know, kind of shatter your hopes for a big full moon, but it would wash every bit of topsoil, every tree, every building, every human being. So great would the inrush of the tides be, would create hurricanes in the air. But you wouldn't be worried about the hurricanes, I assure you that. In due time, the mountain ranges of the earth would be shattered and eroded and washed back into the ocean beds. And so great are the ocean beds in comparison to the continents that had you a cosmic steam shovel, you could scoop the continents of this world into the ocean beds and have a planet 1.5 miles deep in water without a single foot of dry ground on which to stand. So let's save the moon about 240,000 miles away. What you say, young court couples? But look at it. Here are 9 things. Tilted just right, spinning just right, wobbling up just right, wobbling down just right, or zoning just right, or crust just right, speed around the sun just right, temperature just right, distance from the moon just right, all this. The chances of my pulling 9 coins out of my pocket by sheer chance is 1 out of 1 billion. Could it be that all these things are happening by accident? Maybe, but let me use one more illustration and then close. While all this is going on in the microscopic world, and I pull these from the telescopic, but in the microscopic world, you know there's a process going on in which our lives are utterly, absolutely dependent. In every green leaf, blade of grass, or weed, or shrub, or tree, or whatever it is, in the little green cells, chloroplast, so tiny, energized by sunlight, that little green cell does a magnificent job. It takes carbon dioxide from the air, water moisture from the soil, and restructures it and builds a molecule of starch. And on that process, the total animal kingdom is utterly, absolutely dependent. If that one process ceased or were not functioning, we'd die of one of two reasons. Either starvation, for that's the basic food-producing process, or asphyxiation, for that frees oxygen back into your atmosphere, without which it would soon all be oxidized out, and you and I would die. Working just right. Now, back in my college generation many years ago, some bright scientist isolated a substance called chlorophyll from that little green cell called chloroplast, found out it had a marvelous odor-killing property, and then some other genius made a fortune because he added it to toothpaste. So my generation, because it made our breath kissing sweet, and so we use it in big numbers. But these 10 things, now, working just so well together. Accident, maybe so now. Maybe by chance, but let me come back. If the chances would be of my pulling them out 1 through 10 by accident, 1 out of 10 billion, what would you say the chances that I could do it twice in a row? How about 1,000 times in a row? Now stay with me just for another minute. How about 1 billion times in a row by accident without one coin out of order? Could you believe that? Could you really? And yet, young ladies and young gentlemen, that's precisely the type of faith that a person's got to have to look at this universe and believe it happened by chance. For our living protoplasm is so complex, just the one molecule of protein itself, about 2,000 atoms in that protein molecule, the chances of just that one protein molecule happening by accident is so remote that one French scientist said that theoretically it's just impossible. For he said the chances of the 2,000 atoms now, just in the one molecule, so basic to living
protoplasm, just a protein molecule. The chances of those 2,000 atoms happening together just exactly right, he said, is 1 out of the number 10 raised to the 321st power. He said if you take those 2,000 atoms, put them in a test tube, and shake them at the rate of the speed of light, he calculated it'd take as many years as the number 10 raised to the 243rd power. That many years to accidentally have the 2,000 atoms fall into a perfect protein molecule that's only one molecule necessary to living matter. To put it in other dimensions, as I hasten to close, you'd have just about as much chance if you'd go down to a huge newspaper of a city, take all of the individual lead letters, throw them up into the air, and have them fall into one of William Shakespeare's works perfectly, such as Macbeth or Hamlet, without a misspelled word, a misplaced period, or a misplaced comma. Now, anybody that could believe that ought not look at me and think I'm the ignoramus and that I'm the gullible believer, because I believe it happened by choice. I wouldn't believe you beyond the third coin, and I cannot believe that all of this is by the sheer accident. I, for one, have to say with the words of that popular song, O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed, then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Some may believe it's by chance. I believe it's by choice. But let me hold you 1 minute, my personal testimony. That did not make me a Christian. I was not an atheist, but I was a secularist, living my life as a high school teenager without serious regard for God. Nobody ever made me go to Sunday school. Mother and Dad never made me go to church. I never saw my dad in church until I was converted, surrendered to preach. He came to hear me. Never saw my mother in church except one time when her body was brought in a casket into the church for her funeral. Never made to go. No atheist, not denying God, ignoring God, planning my life, going my way, busily fulfilling my plans. And I heard a high school teacher say one day, the Bible is the world's number one bestseller, but even college graduates, very few of them can say they've read the bestseller of the world completely through. Out of an intellectual challenge and pride, not out of a spiritual interest, I decided I'd read that book so I could say I've read the world's bestseller. And something happened. If that book was right, I was wrong. If it was true, my life was false. No atheist, but just living my life without serious regard for God. And one day I met Jesus Christ face to face. He transformed my life, came in and gave me direction and purpose. This is what made me a Christian, but I found as a student, science did not destroy my faith. It made me realize the greatness of God. Young ladies, young gentlemen, it's not enough to admit there's a God. Book of James says even the devils believe there's a God. It's not marvelous to me that there's a God. What's marvelous to me is a God that great could love me so much. He could come in Jesus Christ and die to save me from sin. That's the greatest news I've ever heard. That's the greatest bit of knowledge I've ever learned. That's the greatest reality in life. Jesus Christ, my Lord and my Savior. Would you bow your heads? Oh God, how great indeed thou art. But the greatest of greatness is the revelation of thyself in Jesus Christ, and the fact that we, by knowing him, can thus know thee. We're thankful for college students who believe and know him personally. Deepen our faith and strengthen us that we might live as thy witnesses on this great campus. Use us wherever we are as living testimonies to thy great grace. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.